A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Gordon dives, and yes, he made that catch. A tremendous catch that robbed Chicago of two runs by the Gold Glover Alex Gordon.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future. This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Baseball Ball. I am Troy Olson, and it's just a little old school here with myself and Mike Lingle. Mike, how's it going today?
It's Saturday. I've been better, but it's okay.
Yeah, you got a little bit of a, you said you had a little bit of a flu bug or something today.
It's something, yeah. I don't know. I woke up about half an hour ago, so we'll see how this goes.
So, famous last words. We're going to try to do a quick show today. Not a whole lot of baseball going on, but I do have interviews scheduled for later today for Jason Adam and tomorrow with Ryan Verdugo. So
that'll be fun.
Depending on how long this show goes today, we'll either post those this week, or we might save those for next week, depending on what happens between now and next week, because we want to continue to put out quality baseball coverage for you once a week. But if there's not much going on, it makes it a little more difficult to do that.
Yep.
Just a few notes. Last night, something I also might include is I called into the Ben Maller show because Ben Maller on Fox Sports, which if you don't listen to Ben Maller on Fox Sports Radio on the weekends, he's the overnight guy and he's awesome. Him and JT Brick do such a great job of holding up the nighttime stuff. I know Mike's not a real big sports
radio
fan,
guy.
But he's very good and y'all should listen to him. He's actually, this might interest Mike a little bit, but he's actually has been to Kansas City before, and he's a huge Chicken Tenders fan. And the Brooksider down in Brookside actually has Ben Maller's favorite Chicken Tenders, and they're now called the Ben Maller Chicken Tenders. So he's kind of got some Kansas City ties.
If you can get a menu item named after you, I think you've arrived, basically, is what it comes down to.
I count that as good, you know.
Yeah, that's something to put on a resume.
Right. He's a very good guy, and I don't call into a lot of sports talk anymore. Occasionally I'll call into the local shows, but he was actually giving some love to the Kansas City fans and not being on our case for the booing thing and whatever else have you. And so I called in and talked with him a little bit about some of that, and he kept me on for a call, and it was a good amount of time. So I may include that in one of these shows as well. And then no Echo Sports report today, just out busy, so we won't have one of those, but go K-State, and I was getting a little bit razzed because, or Jeff was getting a little bit razzed because we were talking up West Virginia last week, and then West Virginia goes out and lays an egg, but go K-State, for all the local teams here, it's the only one that's worth cheering for, even if you're a KU fan. I think you got to get on the K-State bandwagon at this point. Just go with it. Getting down to business here, we do have a little bit of baseball action going on. Some things coming up is here just after the World Series, which likely will be between the Cardinals and the Tigers. It probably couldn't be about two more hated teams for Royals fans.
It could be. There's the Yankees, too.
You know what? I'm going to go on a bit of a rant because this has been bugging me all week. I know Detroit's supposed to be a bigger city than Kansas City or whatever, and there's this whole market thing, you know, small market, big market, medium market, whatever. St. Louis is medium market. We're supposedly small market. Yep. Crap. I also saw a thing where St. Louis has all homegrown players. Actually, this came from our good friend Jeff Passan. He mentioned how a good portion of their team is homegrown and how unusual that is. So maybe that'll be the Royals in a couple of years, but it's a good example of how much better they've been ran than the Royals have, and then adding a little bit of money here and there where needed. But Detroit is a bankrupt city. They don't have any money, and they're able to have an owner that spends as much money as the Ilitches did for the Tigers and have fans come out and pay ticket prices that made that profitable. So tell me again how Kansas City can't afford to spend money.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in some ways, the market size probably determines TV contracts. But I think if you put a winner out there, you see attendance jump. And your market is only as big as you want to allow it to be in some cases. Detroit's a good one because, you know, they just wanted to spend. And ever since about 2006 when they went out and signed Ivan Rodriguez, they were telling everybody, we're going to go spend money and get good players in here. And their payroll's consistently been up there among the top in the league. So once you make that commitment, you know, you see wins come through and you start winning ball games and you're considered a contender every year and people will buy season tickets and people will come to your games and you'll get 25 to 30,000 nearly every night. And as it gets into playoff time and, you know, the contention, yeah, you'll be selling out all the time if you're not already. So I don't know. We talked a lot about, you know, David Glass and kind of how he approaches the team last year, if he does so more as a fan or as a businessman. But if he can do both, you know, consider that if you have any business, you want to run your business with the best people you can, you have to make an investment in those people. You have to put money into something to get something back. You have to put in proper training and logistics and all of that, and you get back increased productivity. So if he invests via payroll into the Royals, they should see a better team. They put out a better product, and more people will buy that better product. So it kind of compounds on itself. It's just, it's kind of crazy to kind of think about how other teams can go out there and do that. You know, I think David Glass has plenty of money. And if he doesn't, then maybe he shouldn't be the owner.
Yeah, and that's kind of my rant for the day that I didn't originally plan. But
yeah, me neither, but you know, you brought it up. It's fun.
It perturbs me. So baseball is going to be a little bit slow for the Royals until after the World Series. We're going to do our best to put out a show every week as we have before. We've got a couple of guests that we have lined up that we want to go through and
love guests.
We just got to figure out some more logistics for getting Skype recording to a Windows computer. I bought a new computer that should be here next week, so I'm going to set up a whole bunch of stuff on that and see if we can get a good show like we used to. Well, we still have a good show. Get the show back to the way it used to be with a little more involvement from guests and what have you. So we're going to continue to work that direction. The biggest thing that's coming up for the Royals right now is they have to deal with arbitration and contract options and potentially the re-signing of Jeremy Guthrie. I assume that the Royals will at least make him an offer. I don't know how much they'll pay for Guthrie. I mean, I've said all along that you can't give this guy more than 2 to 3 years and no more than $7 to $8 million. I had said six originally, but I've upped that a little bit. But I think he's going to demand $10 million on the open market.
Yeah, the way he pitched in Kansas City, plus his track record before Colorado, you know, he was a guy who was a little better in league average. Anytime you have a pitcher who can make 30 or more starts and is getting 200 innings or more, that's going to have some value. And Guthrie has value, especially, you know, the way he finished and the way that, you know, he would impact this team. He's going to get a good contract. And it's going to be difficult to see what the Royals are actually going to offer him because I feel like they're either going to make an offer that's way too low or they're going to overpay. And I don't know that they're going to find that happy medium. But I think he'd be a good guy to have on in the rotation next year. I don't really want to go in with Guthrie being the number one starter. You know, he's done it before in Baltimore, but I think there are options out there that you know, I would rather have, and I think it's going to take more than just re-signing Guthrie to make this rotation, you know, competitive, and even better than competitive, you know, a strong one. So, you know, but I'd like to get him. He was on MLB Network's Intentional Talk the other day. I think it was yesterday even. And it was, you know, he's just a funny guy. He's an interesting guy to kind of listen to. He's probably one of those guys that's going to end up being in a broadcast booth at some point because he's, you know, he's just good at talking about baseball and has a good sense of humor about things. And, you know, sometimes those little things, I think the Royals kind of look at them a little bit. You know, they brought in Francoeur. They brought in, you know, guys they want to have that are good for the clubhouse. So, you know, it might be something that weighs on their mind that makes them more apt to make an offer. But I think they're going to offer him something. And he said before that he's kind of interested in sticking around. So, you know, I think there's a good chance they re-sign him, but I don't think it's a lock by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, and I think staying in reality, I think the best position you can hope for the Kansas City Royals is that they go out and get a – well, there was this article that I saw on CNNSI that was wrote by this really intelligent guy about Anibal Sanchez. I think that could be an interesting article, which, Mike, you might know a little bit about that article.
Yeah.
And I still hope that we can somehow land Brandon McCarthy on the cheap and then keep Jeremy Guthrie, because we shouldn't have to overpay for him because he does like it here. So there's that. And so there's that hope. Ooh. that didn't go behind me like I thought it was going to. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see nonetheless. The big one, of course, that local fans are going to care about is Joaquin Soria is most likely not going to have his option picked up in 3 days following the World Series. It's $8 million with a $750,000 buyout. Most likely the Royals buy that out in an attempt to re-sign him to a 2 or 3 year deal.
Yep.
On the cheap, which is what he should get, 2 or 3 mil max. You don't know what he's going to bring next year.
Yep.
A heavy, you know, incentive-laden contract and just go from there.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be, no matter what team ends up with him, you know, whether that's the Royals or if they can't get something worked out if he goes somewhere else, you know, he's starting throwing now. His surgery, his Tommy John surgery, happened at the end of March. Usually it's about a year for them to make a comeback to where they can throw in a real game situation. So that kind of puts it at a point where he wouldn't start the season with a major league team most likely because, you know, he has to get back into that game speed. He'd probably do a month of rehab work in the minor leagues, probably maybe a month and a half. It kind of depends on the team and how aggressive they are in bringing those guys back. And the Royals, at least in the case of like John Lamb, they seemed pretty patient about getting him back, and then he had a setback with his ankle, so that pushed him back even further. But you know, they've also moved up Felipe Paulino's first throwing date, and Blake Wood seems ahead of schedule, and Danny Duffy, I think, starts throwing pretty soon too. So all of those guys seem kind of on the same pace from coming back from Tommy John surgery. So, you know, I think if they do re-sign him, we probably see Joaquin Soria back in May. And then I'm not sure what role he'll have. I don't think they put him back in the closer spot, but you know, it could be something where he starts in the sixth inning, and as he shows that he can handle that, you know, moves up until he's most likely in a setup role. I don't know that they're going to put him as a closer again. But I think they'll work something out. I think both sides want to stick around. So, you know, he's doing all his rehab work with the Royals, you know, because he's still their player. And that, I think that's going to be something that factors in because, you know, if a team shows a player that they're going to stick by him in, during an injured period like this, I think that, you know, I think that counts for something. And, you know, there's obvious loyalty because he signed the extension and the Royals have had him in the organization since 2007. And, you know, I think something's going to work out and it's going to be a lot of incentives. Like if he hits 60 innings at the big league level, he'll get this. If he's at this point in his ERA or whatever, you know, he'll get that. So, you know, it's going to be a pretty interesting to see, and it happens right after the World Series. The Royals have 3 days to make their decision on him. It's pretty obvious that they're going to, you know, buy him out, but I think part of that is going to also, you know, be that negotiation for whatever they'll re-sign him at.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do there. Outside of that, the Royals are actually sitting pretty stout on players. You know, they have done something that isn't very Royal, and they have actually signed several of their players. Gordon through 2015, Butler through 2014, Escobar through 2015, some guy named Jeff Francoeur through next year.
Bruce Chen.
Bruce Chen, same thing. Sal Perez through 2016, and Noel Arguez through 2014, but he's bad.
Yeah.
He's never making it to the major leagues.
Probably not.
From the arbitration eligible list, and remember, one thing to keep in mind, Dayton Moore has never went to arbitration with players.
He's never went to the hearings with them. They've always come to a settlement.
Yes. Yep. So it will be interesting to see. This is the part that we'll talk about the most, I think, over the next couple of months, is the arbitration deals that come out of it. They've already said they want to keep Luke Hochaver, even though he's a non-tender candidate. So he's supposed to get $5 million in arbitration, so I assume they'll pay him somewhere around that to keep him. Maybe he'll take a hometown discount or something, but we'll see what happens there. But expect to have him back. Felipe Paulino's eligible for arbitration. He made $2.7 million last year. With his injury, I don't know how they look at that with arbitration, but he'll definitely get a raise because he showed the ability to.
Yeah. If they don't come to a deal with him. But yeah. Yeah, it might be a slight raise, but yeah, it. I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I'm kind of thinking guys like Chris Getz and Brian Peña might be in trouble because you know they're up for arbitration. The Royals need to find spots on their 40-man roster for a lot of guys. You know, Mike Montgomery and you know John Lamb, guys who need to be protected from the Rule 5 draft, and just players that they're going to sign. I mean, they're going to need to have those spots open. You know, and they have backup options. They have guys like Adam Moore. They have, you know, they signed Max Ramirez for another season in Omaha. They've got Cody Clark still. So they have guys who could catch if they needed somebody. You know, at second base, if they think that Johnny Giovitelli is the guy, or if they're at least going to give him the shot from the get-go, that might make Chris Getz expendable, considering that they have Irving Falu and they have Tony Abreu both available, and both of those filled in pretty well, Falu especially. And both of those guys are switch hitters, and they're guys who can play more positions than Chris Getz as well. So, you know, that kind of flexibility really helps out in, you know, for a team that's trying to find a spot to fit everybody in. You know, if you have Chris Getz, who only hits left-handed, only plays second base, and his career best season was 16% worse than an average major league season, well, you know, it kind of makes it an easy choice. But he does bring some to the team. I think he's good friends with Hosmer Moustakas, and so, you know, they're not going to sign him just on that basis, but it is something that, you know, if they look at the whole picture, I think it's going to be, you know, a little bit of it that they'll have to factor in because, you know, there is some kind of camaraderie and rapport with the other players.
It's going to take about $1.5 million to get back Peña or Getz. I could see both of them getting re-signed, but then the 40-man issue does play in there, and we'll see how that works out.
It's just a weird – I mean, it's a strange year because the Royals almost have too many good players that they want to have involved, and I'm not used to that. Usually there are obvious cuts to make, and they're not as obvious this year.
They have 40 MLB-ready players. The problem is none of those are really, you know, blow-your-mind-away type players. So
yeah, the obvious ones are the guys that are in the lineup every day, and, you know, then the other guys, you know, you're still kind of figuring them out. So, you
know, so the last
David Lowe and Gerard Dyson.
Right. The last arbitration eligible player is Blake Wood. He made $600,000 last year. He's out with Tommy John surgery as well.
Yeah.
Not really sure how you would even judge him going forward. He'd probably get a mil or so, but I'm sure the Royals will figure out some way to keep him around as well because they have been really fond of him over time.
Yeah, his first year wasn't very good. His second year was a lot better, and then he got hurt. And that's not a lot to go on, but he's always been a guy who's ranked in their prospect lists, you know, up through, you know, until he debuted. You know, he's always been a guy who's thrown pretty hard, 95, 97. You never profiled as more than what he has been, a middle relief kind of guy, but, you know, if you can get those guys cheap, that's not too bad. The problem he may run into is that the Royals have a lot of guys who can fit that role. They've got, you know, Donnie Joseph is somebody who could come up, and you know, he would be maybe more of a lefty specialist, while Tim Collins could be more of a guy who could face everybody in that case. They have other guys that could just come up and fill that role, so it may be something that they do pass on him. But like I said, I think they are going to keep him because I think they do like his talent, and it's tough to find guys who can throw that hard that they've had success with, even average success with, within the organization. And it may be one of those things where it's the devil you know. You know, they want to keep a guy that they've already seen and, you know, see what happens from that. And some of it also probably is determined by how quickly and how well he can recover from Tommy John surgery and how his rehab goes. So, you know, that's the million or million and a half dollar question. So we'll see what they end up going with there, I guess.
And one of the changes to the CBA now is that there is no more Type A or Type B free agents. Yep. So that was always somewhere that the Royals, they'd sign these guys and hang on to them until the end of the year and then let them go in the draft or in free agency and take the extra draft pick, which has led to having this system. Well, now you had to offer a certain amount of money to get the compensation to the free agent. And this year's estimate, again, I say it's an estimate, somewhere between $13 and $13.5 million. So most likely they will not offer Jeremy Guthrie $13.5 million. More importantly, I don't think any other team would. So they would end up getting stuck with him at that. So don't expect any compensation for him this year either.
Well, and the way it would work, it's a little complicated too, because first the Royals would have to make that qualifying offer, which I don't know that he would sign it. I think he's probably looking for something longer term. But if he did sign with another team, it would be whatever agreement they came up with. It wouldn't necessarily have to be that $13 million mark. But the other catch is that a player who has been traded within the season isn't eligible to bring back compensation. It's an aspect that I always forget, and then I just remembered it, that it works a little differently, because a lot of teams would usually, they would go out at the trading deadline and they would bring in all of these guys that projected to be Type A or Type B free agents. And, you know, those are based off of two-year projections, so you can always kind of get an idea who's going to be where. And they would bring them in knowing that they would end up being free agents. And, you know, that's how you end up with guys like the Rays, where they end up with like 13 of the first 42 draft picks in 2011 and things like that. So, you know, it's something that isn't as exploitable now as it was before. Supposedly that may even it out for other teams. I don't know. But the Royals, no matter what, their pick this year is going to be protected. So if they do sign somebody else who has been made one of those qualifying offers, they're not going to lose a draft pick because of it. So that's a good thing to kind of keep in mind. You know, they can maybe be a little more aggressive than one of those teams in the middle 10 picks in the first round that might shy away from somebody because they don't want to lose a pick.
Yay for sucking. Jumping back to the second base conversation, don't forget Christian Colon did make it to AAA. He's slotted to be a utility second base shortstop as well.
Yeah.
So add that guy, Giovitella, Colon, Abreu, and help me out.
Falu,
thank you. You know, all utility guys. So all could play – well, actually, this is what hurts Giovitella is unless he really gets hot with the bat and can really show like a middle 300 batting average, he's probably not going to be long for this team because the other three or four guys can play so many other positions unless Giovitella can truly win that second base starting job and then everybody else can fill in around him. But Abreu and Falu can play all over the diamond, including third base, I believe. I know Abreu can.
Yeah,
I believe they can play second, short, and third. Colon can definitely play second and short, plus you've got a draft pick and some money invested in him. So that's pretty much you're going to be your infield utility guys for the foreseeable future. because they're going to be cheap and usable. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Johnny Giovitella and Chris Getz, because both of those guys only second baseman, and there's a lot of other guys in this organization that could play that as well. Yeah. The last note that we have here today in the live show is the off-season leagues are underway. Nothing too exciting going on.
No. I wish there was.
Max Ramirez is doing really well in the Venezuelan leagues. The Royals are looking pretty good overall in the AFL. Notably, Brian Fletcher is hitting. Oh, I'm sorry, Brian Fletcher isn't doing well. Some of the other ones are. Alex McClure is hitting like 273, which is nice. But Whit Merrifield is the one I wanted to call up. He's hitting about 313. There's a lot of hope for him to really get hot and carry that over. Justin Marks has pitched in two games and has an ERA of zero in six innings.
He's done well.
So that's a good sign. I lost him in the Rule 5 draft on my league as well. This year. I just didn't have enough space for him, and he hadn't impressed. But we'll talk about that here coming up. Did you want to add anything on the off-season leagues right now?
Well, you're right. There's not a lot of exciting names in there. I mean, there is a couple. Brian Fletcher is a good hitting prospect. Jorge Bonifacio is a guy. He's playing in the Dominican. He's a big prospect name, and he really jumped up a lot of lists this season. He's still really young. He is, I believe, 20. He might not even be that old. So he's going to be getting a little bit of time in there. The really interesting name out there is Orlando Calixte, who's a shortstop. And the Royals have a ton of shortstops in their minor league system now. In the last 5 years, that's one of the bigger things that Dayton Moore's done is go out and get a bunch of shortstop guys. Umberto Arteaga is a guy like that. Adalberto Mondesi is a guy like that. Jack Lopez is a guy like that. Bob Dutton had a really good article about all that shortstop depth. And they're all behind Alcides Escobar, who had a great year last year too. So, he's an interesting name. Marks, I think, is kind of interesting because he showed some improvement last year. J.C. Solbaron, who we got from the Reds for Jonathan Broxton, made his first start the other night. He's not in the list of statistics that I've got pulled up, but he went, I think it was three innings, didn't walk anybody, so that's a good sign. But there's nobody really, super interesting like last year when Will Myers was in the Arizona Fall League and just tore it up and really kind of redeemed himself after a rough season in Double-A where he was, hurt most of the a good part of the first half, didn't really hit like we thought he would, hit well, but, not as he had in the previous levels in the minor leagues. And I think part of that really kind of pushed him forward to where he was, able to have a great year last year. So, but, there's not really a lot of really big names down there right now. You've got, guys like Edwin Carl, who's kind of been a strikeout machine the last few years, but he's kind of playing at levels that are he's kind of overmatching people. So it's fun to kind of keep track of and see who's there and see maybe somebody pops up. There's a diamond in the rough or whatnot. But it's mostly just kind of there to get people more work and get them exposed to other players and different levels of competition and things like that. Which is good. It's just not terribly exciting in some cases.
It is what it is, and like I said, not a whole lot of baseball going on, and we'll see what happens going forward. But on that note, we're going to take our first break. We're going to come back and do our Out of the Park segment, and then after that, you'll either have the end of the show or you'll have a couple of interviews. It depends on how everything shakes out at the end. But we'll be right back on the other side.
Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson, joined by Michael Engel. So Mike and I and Jeff, who's unavailable today, are doing a little what if you were Dayton Moore, and we're using Out of the Park 13, which can be found at otpdevelopments.com. Pick it up; it's $40. It's the best baseball simulator that's out there. You don't actually—I mean, you can play the games, but you don't actually like swing the bat. You tell them what situation, depending on the situation you're in, you tell them what you're going to do, and you go from there. My team is awful. I cannot. I have decided that the Royals are doomed to never win under anybody. I'm having a heck of a time. I managed to get them to 2 .500 seasons, and now I'm in. And then I let all of my management pretty much go. I tried to sign Kevin Seitzer, but he wanted to go on to some other things. He was my bench coach. I let all those go. Same year, Clint Hurdle gets fired from the Pirates, and I have a love affair with Clint Hurdle. And so I run and grab him, and my team is producing the worst season they've ever done in this, and that's 25-40 right now. So there's a good chance that I'll be canning to Clint Hurdle at the end of the year and see if that'll help snap this team out. But I did draft an interesting pitcher, Mario Rule, who I don't believe is a real person, but he went from Idaho to Burlington to Wilmington to Omaha, or to Wilmington all in 2014, and then he opened 2015 in Omaha, and probably will be on my pro team here shortly.
Probably going to call him up pretty soon.
They tell me he's ready, so he's a 24-year-old second-year player with a 6.3, 3.83 ERA in the minors, so... My pitching has been a bit of a problem. I've had some games where I've gotten beat 15-1, and then I lose other games 6-5. Hosmer's hurt. Cologne's hurt. Cologne is on my major league team. Trevon Robinson's hurt. And even who did I say earlier when I saw you? Oh, Billy Hamilton, who I traded for. I don't know if I mentioned that last week. He's nope. He's having some problems trying to get going. But funny story about Billy Hamilton in the 2014 season on this. So I brought him up to the majors about a month or two into the season. He gets hurt. He's out for 6 weeks to end the year. So he only played probably 3 months, had 65 stolen bases, and won the stolen base crown.
Just ridiculous.
And that is probably pretty spot on for how it's going to be in real life. And I do have both Mike Moustakas and Nolan Arredondo, and I've played Arredondo a little bit at second and first, and wherever else I can find a spot to put him in Moustakas, uh-huh. But that's been kind of a nice combination, although he's not having a very good year either. Mike, you've been a little more successful. Tell us a little bit about your league.
Well, a little bit more successful, not terribly more successful. The first year, as I covered, we went to the playoffs. We made the last wild card spot, ended up losing that wild card play-in game. The next year, in 2013, started out really well. We were doing well through the All-Star break, and then somewhere about August, wheels just came off. We finished about 6 games under. None of the pitchers really showed up. Nobody was really that good. Let me see if I can find my pitching stats to give you an idea. Because I had gone out, and I had signed Anibal Sanchez and Cole Hamels that offseason just – specifically to bolster the rotation, and it just did not work. They both had ERAs, but well, Hamels had an ERA above 4. Sanchez was hurt all season, so he's only now coming back. I'm in 2014. I'm about 20 games in. Just haven't had a lot of time this week to play the game, unfortunately. I mean, in this game, you're given control of a huge budget that you can put towards payroll and your minor league scouting and things like that. Unfortunately, you can't apply it towards rent and car payments and things like that, so I had to go to work. So,
right. I had that problem, too.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It would be nice, but yeah, I mean, the guys, Hamels had a 4.56 ERA. Chris Medlin's in my rotation. He had 4.88. Danny Duffy, 4.96. Luke Hochaver, 4.88. Jeremy Guthrie, 5.21. So you wonder how we ended up doing so poorly. You know, and it was just, you know, one of those years where nothing really kind of got together. Kind of skated by for a little bit and then, you know, just didn't turn around. But all of those pitchers, they all had a batting average on balls in play above 300. So I'm thinking this 2014 year, all those guys are back. I have Alexi Egondo in my rotation now. I think he's going to be somebody who helps out. You know, that's the hope. You know, unfortunately, I lost Mike Montgomery. He pitched in 2013 and did pretty well, or 2012 even, and did pretty well. And then somewhere in September, he had a shoulder problem and hurt his shoulder. And then by December, he'd had a setback. And by January, he'd retired. So I got about 3 months of Mike Montgomery on this game and had to kind of come up with a backup plan.
That's all right. They seemed to be in love with him for the first couple of seasons on mine. And then he went through arbitration because I have not been able to settle with these guys before it goes to the arbitrator. And he's getting $5.75 million this year. Dang. And he's 4-9 with a – let me get back here. With a – he's got a 242 on – or I'm sorry, a 293 on balls in play. And he's 4-9 with a 4.45 ERA, 97 innings pitched in 14 games. So he's been a bit frustrating this year on $6 million, part of my troubles.
Yeah.
There is some funny stuff you can do with this. Like I said, it's very realistic. All the names are out there of all the people you could possibly think of. And I actually signed Allard Baird at one point to manage my minor league system. And I lost my trainer my scout this last year, so then I converted him to scout. But Allard Baird, back working for the Royals.
Oh, my. He's definitely looking for Kevin Mensch somewhere. I need to go back and look at all the weird Allard Baird things that he said in the – like, oh, man. I mean, we weren't planning on talking about Allard Baird, but since you brought him up, that guy – I mean, he was – you look at the worst trades in Royals history, at, you know, Jermaine Dye for Nefi Perez, Johnny Damon for Roberto Hernandez, and who's the other guy? Beltran. The Beltran one was the best one of those three. But what he would always do is he would always tell everybody exactly what he wanted, and – you know, you can't do that. You got to go out and get the best group of talent that you can. Yeah. And, you know, you can't tell people, well, I need to get a third baseman and a catcher out of this, because all you're going to get is a third baseman and a catcher. You're not going to get maybe a first baseman who turns into a monster, or a second baseman who wins, you know, 5 gold gloves and 2 batting titles or something. You know, you have to go for the best talent you can get. And he would not do that. He would always, you know, tell everybody exactly what he wanted, exactly what he had to get, and then they would, you know, come up with the trade. Oh, we need a closer. Oh, Roberto Hernandez. That's the best closer you can get on the trade market. And he was terrible. You know, we need a shortstop, so they go get Nefi Perez, and he was terrible. And,
you know, he played for both the Rockies and the Royals. He was drafted by the Rockies.
He was terrible.
Yeah, tell me about it. I saw him for many years.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
But yeah, so just check them out at ootpbaseball.com. We'll link it on the podcast page, of course, as always. We're going to be doing this for one more week. And then like the Royals, I'm going to choke sitting here. We're going to once we're done with this, and we'll go our own ways with it. And I probably won't continue on with the franchise I'm working on now, but you do see the different salaries for the different markets like you would expect. One thing about my game that I was going to ask you guys, and I haven't asked Jeff, but I'll ask you this, Mike. Did it kill off all of your owners too?
Somebody died. I don't pay that much attention to the news feed that they put up. Somebody did die. I don't remember who it was.
The Royals are owned by the lesser known son, Josh, right now.
Josh Glass.
Josh Glass. So
okay, how old was David Glass?
When happened in 2012 or 2013. So
oh my,
yeah, it was pretty quick. And they killed like 9 owners in one season. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, everybody died. There was like a mass murder at the winter meetings or something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like that scene in Godfather 3 with the helicopter. They're all in this big room and they just get shot down. That would be terrible. I don't condone gun violence in any way, so don't do that.
And I don't want to see our owner die anytime soon, even though he is a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I just want to see him sell the team and then go on to a long and fruitful life of working for Walmart.
Or whatever else he's doing.
Whatever else he's doing. Working on a farm. I don't care. He can do whatever. Live till 90.
He can own the whole. He can own the whole state of Arkansas as long as he's not. As long as he's not messing with the Royals anymore.
Right.
Let's see. Any other details on this game that I wanted to bring up? I didn't make notes like Mike does, so I just kind of. I did try to be successful and went out and spent some money. Traded for Carlos Gonzalez and actually had an overload in the outfield. And Alex Gordon got mad at me and demanded to be traded, and so I satisfied that for him. And at one point, I was just trading off somebody to make space and ended up bringing back David Lowe. I lost Odorizzi accidentally in the Rule 5 a couple years ago. Lost Marks this year, but it's not a big deal. So,
yeah, the Rule 5's kind of, it's sometimes you got to lose a player.
You should get compensation out of that. That's one thing they need to put in the next CBA. That's just my opinion.
Well, it's so rare that they actually take a player and they actually stick. So it's, it's maybe one player every year will happen. I don't, it's rare enough that I don't think they're going to change anything on it.
So I guess the moral of the story with this game is if this game is close to reality, it really is. The problem with this game is really the owner, because I've replaced the manager, I am the GM, so we'll just put all the problem on the owner. How about that?
Yeah, yeah. Still not winning.
Still not winning.
Yeah.
So, that's how it goes. But anyways.
Year 9.
Yeah, we'll see. Oh, I was going to say, so what I'm going to do next with this is I'm going to go back through and I might reach out to you, Mike, and see if you can help me track down the documentation for this or anybody else that's out there listening that wants to help me out. I want to go through and I want to find a list of what players from each draft going back to 1969 have made it to the show. Who all has made it to the major leagues. And when they were drafted, and then I want to go back through, and I'm going to start in 1969, and I'm going to have a little hindsight's 2020, go back through and draft the greatest team ever, and see how much difference that makes for the Royals.
My goodness.
As time goes on, so I think that'll be kind of fun to see what would happen.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It sounds like a lot of fun to me. I don't know what your problem is.
That sounds like something that should be a lot of fun to me, but it sounds like a lot of work to me.
I think the preparation on it's going to be a lot of work because I don't know if I can find. I'll check Baseball Reference and some other places, but
Baseball
I'm
Reference
need
will have most. Well, they should have some indication on there if they made it or not. I think they'll
essentially
bowl
I need
them or
a list of whoever was the most successful players that came through the draft, and of course when George Brett comes up to draft, we'll go ahead and draft him, and we'll draft Frank White, and even if they're not the best players at the spot, we'll take them just because they're true Royals. So
I wonder if Brett was the best player in that draft.
There's your mission for next week. You have to find out before next show.
Wow. Probably find out pretty quick.
So, but I think with that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Head over to otpdevelopments.com, pick up the game, $40. It's the best $40 you'll spend. And then head out to Kelly. Put it on your laptop. Head out to Kelly's. Get on Kelly's free Wi-Fi. And get on the online portion of the game and find any friends you have playing or download some extra rosters, whatever you might want to do. Have a couple of beers and then have a good time while listening to the Kansas City Baseball Bowl.
Can't go wrong.
Sounds like a winner right there.
Yeah.
Like I said, this episode may have a couple of interviews on the back end with like I said, it's Jason Adam and Ryan Verdugo. I am going to ask Verdugo about not coming up the last month, but if he was already in trouble with the team, he probably won't say much because he does hope to be with the Royals next year. But I'll ask him about if he I'm sure he's going to give us a lot of those standard Major League Baseball player type answers.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to ask him about his sister and being her brother and what it's like, because she's definitely been an interesting follow on Twitter. And he's a
What's it like being your sister's brother?
Yeah, what's it like to be the brother of Evan Verdugo?
It's Emma.
Yeah, I kind of combined her Twitter handle and her name together.
You kind of did, yeah.
So
it looks like Everdugo.
If for some reason that I don't get those done, or I just decide this is enough show for right now,
we'll have it next week.
We'll have it next week. Yeah. And we got some other stuff working. I'm going to reach out to Danny Duffy and Brian Pena. We're going to reach out to Jason Parks. And Parks is a lock. We just have to get the Skype stuff figured out. And that's the only way that we can have all of us guys talk to somebody in an interview right now with the setup. Yep. So that's why we're saving that one.
If you have Skype tips, because I don't use Skype, I am worthless technologically speaking. I can fire up my laptop and I can paste. I can post things on the blog. That's about what I can do. That's the extent of my knowledge. So if you have tips, hey, let us know. Drop us an email. It's just royalmanreport@gmail.com.
Right. And we'll definitely be reaching out to the Pine Tar Press guys. They've got shows coming up every other week, so check them out as well. They're friends of the program. We were on there, and they've been on here. So check them out as well to keep your baseball knowledge going. And I made it through another show without beating any dead horses, Mike.
Go.
So
that's all we ask.
maybe I'll have to work on beating the dead horse and feeding the dead horse. How about that?
Sounds good.
Until next week, I'm Troy Olson for Michael Engel, for Jeff Bird, who's not with us this week, and for everybody else at Echo Sports. Have a great day. Check out kingsofcompliment.com, and we'll see you next week. Go Royals.